Thank you for downloading the New Comedians bonus content. I'm the host, Alex Boardman, and throughout this series of bonus content, I'm going to be speaking to established comedians and trying to get some tips and tricks from them and learn what it was like when they were new. Okay, let's get on with the show. No comedians. What a day. Hello and welcome to New Comedians bonus content. This is something new that we're trying. I've been a comedian for a long time and I've just been basically chatting to more established comedians, finding out how it was for them when they got started, basically what it was like for people that might be famous or people that are definitely making a living as comedians when they were brand new comedians themselves. So you might get some tips from them, you might get some tricks. If nothing else, you'll learn just how different it was in the past. The first person I got to speak with, what an absolute pleasure, possibly one of the funniest days I've ever had in comedy. I went over to Jimmy Cricket's house to interview him, and this is how it went. This is the extra content from New Comedians, and this is the first one I've ever recorded, so it's really exciting for me.
Yes, from an old comedian.
With Jimmy Cricket, who was one of my favourites when I was a kid, and it's just such a bizarre life to now be sitting interviewing Jimmy. Thank you for that song. Now, how long have you been a comedian, Jimmy?
What time is it now? never let you down. Well, I always trace things from Mrs. Cricket, my good lady. I was hovering on the peripheral for a while. Mm. Holiday camps in the summer.
Right.
Door-to-door salesman in the winter, trying to put an act together. But when I went to one particular holiday camp in 1972,
right,
Pontins in Morecambe,
right,
I met my good lady, May, who was a waitress. She spilt soup on me, actually. I'm not sure if it was minestrone, but when you're jumping in the air, it's very hard to. So we fell in love, and when the end of the summer came, that September, we came to live in Manchester, and that's when I became pretty determined to get out on the boards. So it'd be about 1972.
How old would you be then?
I would have been mid-20s, 26.
Now, had you done... Because that sounds like you made a conscious decision to be a comedian. Leading up to this, when you were brand new, leading up to Pontins and stuff.
Yeah.
How did that go? Was there a training camp? Or was Pontins your training?
Yeah, well, the holiday camps were. I mean, I always wanted to do it, but it was pretty much the determination when I met my good lady. A lot of people say that once they sort of fall in love and they've got somebody behind them. I know I'm going to sound like a hopeless romantic now, but yeah, in any job or whatever it is, if there's somebody there pitching for you, because my good lady actually used to go out and work in factories while I could sit and write and rehearse.
Brilliant.
I can't minimize her, you know, support for that time because it was tricky. I used to drive in an old banger over to Liverpool. And, of course, Liverpoolians are all comedians.
Yeah.
So it used to be quite tough for me. And I used to drive back up the East Lancs Road because the M62 wasn't even there.
Right.
So and say, yeah, that could have been better tonight. And they used to say... a lot of the places, Tom O'Connor was here last week and he was brilliant and I thought, oh, I could wring his neck. Here's a guy that they love. He's a typical... And Tom became a friend and I actually, once when he became a friend, I said, Tom, I used to stick pins and effigies of your photo or whatever it was. Yeah, but I'm still a big... I can fall about. I can go to a Tom O'Connor show and literally, I think he's still on very underrated as a... The problem was in 70s and 80s and times, you would get a very good comedian who would be so good that... obviously, the money was quite addictive that they would do these game shows. But sometimes people would forget that they were
actually a comedian.
Brilliant comedians, even the great Bob Monkhouse. He was so good at what he did, people thought. And when you go and see him live, he would just blow everybody away. Trail me back now if I'm going off on tandems.
Well, let me stop you then. I do. I want to go back to before 72. Right. You had an inkling at some point. Was it a school talent show? Yes. Was it when you started to work at Pontins? Was it a show you went and saw of a comedian maybe somewhere in Belfast and you went, that could be me?
Well, what happened, I came home one day and I said, Dad, I'm so excited. I've got a role in a school play and I'm playing the part of a man who's been married 30 years. He said, go back and tell them to give you a speaking part. No, I'll do the funny ones, and then I'll do the serious ones, right? So the serious one was, my dad sadly died when I was here. We were born in a place called Cookstown.
Yeah.
Where we had a pub.
Which is in
Northern Ireland.
Yep.
But we moved an hour and a half up the road. Dad, it was a young family. When I say young family, I was very, very young. I was 2, but the rest were 12. Bought a shop, my mum and dad, in Northern Ireland. What I do remember is my father and my elder brother, John, in the shop, in the living quarters, would listen to the radio, because the radio was the king then.
Right, okay.
And listen to comics and just fall about at these wonderful comics on radio. And I carried on that tradition when we moved house then. We finished up having to sell the shop and we moved, and my father sadly died. But still was those programs on in the early 50s.
And can you remember any of the people that were on?
I mean, oh, yes, stars. Yes. Reg Dixon. He had a catchphrase called, I'm pearly. I'm proper pearly. And he did it in a very lovely Lancashire, warm Lancashire way. And everybody, the audience would go, ah. So they're very sympathetic. And there was another guy called Ken Platt. He'd go, he's as daft as a brush. Again, Lancashire.
Yeah.
And then he used to open up his act by saying, I won't take me coat off. I'm not stopping. Right? And he did this wonderful, I didn't remember then, but later on, I was on a cruise with a guy called Peter Goodright, who did this complete impression of Ken Platt doing this routine, and it was a cricket routine, and it still stands today, and it works. I'll never forget the time I played cricket. Hope that this accent, you'd forgive me for.
This is fun. This is great.
It took them 6 hours to get me out. Hey, I was locked in the pavilion, right? Yeah. Right, it's lovely stuff. So then I went off to bat, and I could see this cow grazing just 6 foot away from the wicket. I said, Captain, Kai shouldn't be there. He said, of course he shouldn't. He's dropped 3 catches already. It was like surreal, but yeah, very,
yeah,
very...
stuff.
It was.
That is amazing. Those jokes are fantastic.
From that, and we're talking like, you know, as I say, late 40s, early 50s.
Now, here's one quick question, just
hit
as a
me.
Quick aside.
Hit me, what?
When you were listening to this as a kid, how old are you now? 15, 16, 20?
No, you're talking... Seven, eight, nine.
Were you listening to this and were you memorizing
these
jokes?
Yes. Funny enough, you've preempted, because when we moved house over to a place called Andersonstown, I would listen to the jokes and then go into school.
Yes, indeed.
I'd go home for lunchtime. Here's where it all fits in, Alex. And there was a lunchtime show on the radio called Workers' Playtime.
Right. Okay.
This was a thing to keep the workers happy during the war.
Wow.
But it carried on. After the war, and it meant like a couple of comics, a singer, a trio would set up stall in a factory canteen, baked beans,
wow,
wallpaper, and do a half-hour show, and it would be broadcast
live.
I think it was
probably
live.
Was
now that's
live.
A good question. I must look it up.
Probably
it's a Google
was.
Moment. I'm nearly sure it was, but I know at the end they used to read out the credits. Ken Platt and that starred so and so. Ken Platt is now appearing in Dick Whittington at the Theatre Royal in Lincoln. They would be big plugs,
right?
For at the end, from what they were doing at Summer Season, or is now doing a week in Cleethorpes Cabaret, which I thought, what a wonderful thing. And I thought even then, that's a great advert.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
You know, if you're living there and you hear that the radio, and you'll go and sort of see them, it was wonderful. And in hindsight, when I look back, the guys probably weren't paid a fortune, but the plug.
Yeah, it was in different times.
Because
it?
We're talking about national radio, aren't we?
Yeah,
talking
and also there weren't,
it wasn't all split
there
up.
Weren't 100 channels
exactly.
On the internet. There weren't 100 channels
exactly.
On cable.
So when that guy said you were playing a cabaret club in Cleethorpes,
a big
percentage of the population knew, while they're driving
exactly.
along or sitting down to their lunch, that you were going to be there, you know?
So did you ever see Ken Platt live or not?
Yes, I got to work with him.
Wow.
I got to work with him, and it was on radio, ironically. There was a guy called Mike Craig, became a friend of mine. Mike Craig lived in Altrincham, and he was a part of a writing team called Ron MacDonald, Laurie Kinsley, and Mike Craig. And they were very prolific in the 70s. They did stuff for Eric and Ernie, Morecambe and Wise.
Right, okay, wow.
But they specialised in radio, and they did things with Roy Castle, Des O'Connor and the Grumbleweeds radio show.
Oh, I remember the Grumbleweeds radio show, yeah.
Right. When their trio, wouldn't have been a partnership, but a trio of writing things, all went separate ways, Mike then went into production. And one day, I went over to record, it used to be called Grumbleweeds and a Guest. And I was the guest one day, but they did two shows. And you know who the other guest was? Ken Platt.
Wow.
So there you are. I got to
So work. That must have been amazing.
It was.
And did he do any of the stuff that you recognised? Did he do any jokes? And you're like, oh my, I remember that joke because I used to learn it and do it to kids at
yes.
school.
Yes. Oh, he brought the house down. And I remember the Reader's Digest. Readers would write in questions. Where did such and such come from? What about this catchphrase? The catchphrase, daft as a brush, where does it come from? And the answer, post-war comedian Ken Platt was the first to use daft as a brush.
Right. Now, that'll lead me on nicely then, because you've got a couple of catchphrases, as I remember.
Yeah, there's come here, and there's more.
Come here, and there's more.
Yeah.
And also, not Harry Grayson, shut the door. Did you say, close the door? Is the door closed?
I have, yes. I mean, that was a bit too close to Laurie, and I didn't
right.
Do that too much. It was probably lean over. I don't really do that, Mac, now. I mean, I've added new things in, obviously, new catchphrases.
So if we can go back, though, to when I'm wondering, is there a point, is it 1972, uh-huh. when you decided, you know, you met May? You're going to really give it a go?
Yeah, real go.
Now, before this, were you wearing your outfit?
No, no.
No.
What had happened, Meg would help me with the suit. You know, we went down.
Were you just a one-liner con then before this?
Talent shows.
Yeah.
Talent shows and one-liners, but I did the letter from my mammy because I seen an Irish comedian do it. When I was at the holiday camp in Butlins, a redcoat, called Billy Stutt, and he used to do this wonderful letter from his mammy. Dear son, I'm sending you three socks. As you said, since you've gone away, you've grown another foot.
Yeah.
Right. And not to this day. I just keep modernizing it.
The letter, it's a great device.
Well, it is, and it's got nice and slow, and the audience relate to it, and they've all got mothers. And what I would do now, I'd say, dear son, I hope you're having a great time in wherever I am. Now, I think I'm working Nuneaton next Tuesday. Right. Hope Coventry. You're having a great time in Nuneaton. So she's still alive and she's still knowing where I am and for my...
Yeah.
You know. And then she'll say, it was my birthday on Tuesday, as you know, and the whole family bought me a flat screen television set. Bit of a pause. I'm going, oh, you know. I don't like it, son. My ornaments keep slipping off the top. So it's still the mammy, but it's the things.
So the device is the same, but the jokes just get updated, of course.
That's it. Yeah. But often when I would struggle a bit in those days, the letter would get me out.
So to describe Jimmy Cricket, in fact, again, I don't know, because I know we've got some really young listeners. Jiminy Cricket was a character.
Oh, yeah, I get mistaken for that quite regularly.
from Disney. Now, I never saw it until today, till I re-looked again. Jiminy Cricket used to wear a top hat, a frock sort of overcoat. He had a red flower in his lapel.
Yeah.
And he also carried an umbrella.
Right.
And he was kind of dapper. Now, was it a decision for you to be a version of that?
No, I can look you straight in the eye and say that's pure coincidence.
Do you know, Jiminy Cricket...
I know! I've grown into what it was. No, basically, what happened was, and I can do a few things about this, which is quite... When we did talent shows, we were always... You see, around about this time, my wife was singing with her sister as well, you know. Although she was a waitress in Ponton's Holiday Camp, her and her sister Margaret could do harmonies. So I got them work around the Manchester clubs. It was a very blossoming... It was a big industry around here.
Yeah, yeah.
It was working men clubs and social, in every street corner. And cabaret clubs like the Golden Garter, the Talk of the North, Fagan's, Blighty's, the Broadway Club. They roll off the tongue. And you do a complete week.
Right,
it's hard to fathom this. And this was like a Las Vegas at certain parts of UK. Manchester and Liverpool were the Northwest. South Wales had all the clubs in the valleys.
Yeah.
Pontypridd.
And this is the 70s,
60s and 70s, absolutely. And then the northeast was a wonderful area. Sunderland, right up that A1, had all working men's clubs.
It's still great to gig in the northeast.
It still is. They've held on to a lot of their thing. I played Middlesbrough a few weeks ago, and they were just delightful. So I was able to get May and Margaret, but we met friends who I'd known from the holiday camp, and one was a double act called Cyril Walker, and he used to take me round to social clubs and say, because they would know him from a Zach Clayton walk. He'd say, I've got a new young guy, mid-20s, and he wants to just have a go for nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'd just get up and do.
That's what we call an open spot.
What it was that, you know. I remember once I struggled so bad and went off, and they got somebody from the audience to play the mouth organ. He lifted the place. And I remember Cheryl said to me, now, these guys, he pointed to the fellow on the stage, have a sixth sense. If you'd have done well, he wouldn't have went up with that mouth organ. Which is quite, yeah.
Oh, how awful.
But he did say to me, he said, I've seen this suit. Harry, my partner, drove a dustbin around Manchester, the lorry. And he said, he's gone into this, it was a Jewish charity shop that had clothes, but a lot of the Jewish celebrities would give their clothes to be sold. And he said, Frankie Vaughan was a famous singer, Jewish singer.
Yeah.
And he'd give this suit to this charity shop called Sisters of Zion or something. And May said, I'm going to get... And we bought this suit that Frankie bought. But she put braiding on it. It was... Has my good lady sort of gone?
Yes, she's gone. I saw her disappear.
She's gone, everybody. Sorry, she was in the back room and I was looking for inspiration. But no, it was aubergine, I think, that colour. It's like a purpley brown.
Yeah, yeah.
But she put braiding down the collar. I mean, I probably looked like a 70s pop singer then, but you did then. I just wanted to look well. It was only really later when I learned McCraft and thought, I'm a visual comic. Isn't it good to be visual at the start? Because you look like you're a singer and thing. You've got a frilly shirt and an aubergine.
So this developed, because your persona, the exaggerated persona, you were...
Lovely phrase, yeah.
When I was watching you as a kid, you look, and I mean this as a compliment, like an idiot.
Yes, absolutely.
You look like you were daft.
The village idiot.
Just the village idiot. Absolutely,
yeah.
Because your other famous, it was like a visual gag before you'd even spoken.
That's right. Dance on.
You'd always dance on, and you had wellies on that were turned over with left and right written on the wrong feet as well. You got three-quarter length trousers on, which kind of kids are wearing now.
Yeah, I know. It's become fashionable.
Cargo
capri
pants or something.
Right.
You had a hat that looked like it was broken or you were wearing it the wrong way around.
Way round, yeah.
Your sleeves, you had one of these big frock overcoaty kind of
things. Yeah, tailcoat,
Tailcoat. And it seemed massive.
Right.
It seemed to not quite fit. Did you wear fingerless gloves?
One glove and one hand, because the gag was, I've just heard the weather forecast. He said today was going to be sunny, but on the other hand, it might be cold.
So did you wear that just for that one joke?
Yes, I did, I suppose. And then it became part of the thing, you know. I thought, do I really need that for a joke? But then when I went out with bare hands, both, I thought, I'm so used to that glove.
Yeah.
I'm missing it. So I went back and put it on. What had happened then, Alex, was just for the gear. Yeah, I decided then I wanted to dress visually, but I was always wary who was all what was happening at the time, and I didn't want to put a tailcoat on then.
Yeah.
Bobby Ball had a very
He did.
Yes, and you had to watch that with braces, and you're obviously going out of your way to always get something else. So I actually put a white, not a tailcoat, dress jacket.
Right. Okay.
And a bow tie. Then I chopped the trousers off. And then I had the Wellingtons. And it's that garb, if you go on to... And I'm going to... This is coming up on my website, everybody. Just a little plug. I know Alex won't mind.
No.
www.jimmycricket.co.uk. It's called... There'll be a section homepage called The Story in Pictures. We went out to a theatre, which I'm a patron in Blackburn, and I've talked the story with the way I'm doing now, but they have actually shown what I wore on my first talent show called Search for a Star, and I was wearing the white...
The white one.
The white one.
And is that what broke you, that show, that talent show?
Well, here's where it sort of broke me to a degree, but then I wasn't on for 12 months.
Right.
And I tell a slight lie. No, I did a little thing for Granada, which a couple of minutes. He had a Johnny Hamp, who did the comedians and the Wheel Toppers and Chunters. He had a show called The Video Entertainer, so I was on at one point a couple of minutes, but that was all I was on in that whole year. But then I'd written off to a great TV producer and director called Barney Colohan the year before, just before I was coming on Search for Star. And it was one of my favourite shows, The Good Old Days. It's actually back now on Friday nights on BBC Four. So it's incredible.
Really?
Yes.
I remember The Good Old Days. I used to watch it with my mum.
Yeah, and what I loved about it was the audience were all up for it. They were all from operatic society, so they were all singing along with the singers. Yeah. They're laughing their socks off. And I loved, and I said, I'd love to do a spot on that. And he said, well, I'm a bit, thank you for getting in touch. This series is sort of Bob booked up, but I will look out for you on the search for a star. And true to his word, a year later, I got the Christmas version. Now, this is where the gear comes in. When I went to the good old days, they want the acts to wear something that would reflect the Edwardian era. So they had said, not my agent, a very intuitive lady called Phyllis Rounce at the time, and she managed Tony Hancock, and she was an incredible lady, loved humour and comedy, and she said, well, we could put buttons on the Wellingtons, I suppose. And she said, your trousers are all right, but what about a tailcoat? They'll have that for you when you go to wardrobe. Would you be all? I said, yeah. And then they'll give you a hat. And what had happened, there was it was an Edwardian soft bowler. It goes that way. But I had a friend called Brian Gannon. He came over because we shot it at Leeds, the City Varieties. He said, Jimmy, turn it that way. And I just turned the Edwardian soft bowler that way, sideways. And hey, presto, I went on 4 days before Christmas. And it was just a great break for me to be on that show. Yeah. Because you cannot not do well on that show because the audience are gagging for you.
Yeah.
You know? And you will soar with that. You will be seen in the best light. And that was probably even more relevant to my career than the actual Search for a Star one.
So then after that, you just kept the hat. Did you steal the hat?
No, we bought it from them. Because within 2 days, my agent, Phyllis Rance again, London, said, Jimmy, you know what we're going to do? I said, what? We're going to ask him. They sell us that. We've got this. You've got your visual image.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Do you think so? I said, yes, sure so. And she went on the BBC. This is how lucky to get somebody managing. She actually went on the BBC. And they said, well, we only hire it from Nathan's and Berman's. It's gone back.
Oh.
So then she rang Nathan's and Berman's. And they said, yeah, 60 quid.
Oof.
60 quid. I mean, we've had to buy since that a few times. Yeah. And like you're up to a lot more than that, a couple of hundred, really.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. So but it's not the original hat now. If you,
I still have the original hat. I've got another one in case I lose it. So sometimes, rather than have a hang-up, I'll put the other one on. The other one's the nearest you can get to Edwardian bowler.
So you still wear...
I still wear that. In the last couple of shows, I've actually wore the original hat.
Which is, what, 35, 40 years
old? Yes, it was probably used a lot even before me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd go and get it for you, but it's not TV.
Listeners. There's no point.
So,
here it is.
Yeah, here it is, everybody. Can you imagine this one?
This persona then, that kind of seems to have happened by this, sorry, that your outfit seems to have happened a little bit by accident.
It does.
A bit
I think
design.
In a one way, if you're lucky to have the right people around you to see that this could be an opportunity. Mm. But you're right, it did fall into place.
Then you've got the catchphrases, and there's more.
Which they seem to lend itself up. Now, I'd formed them from the clubs, to be honest. So when I got the Search for a Star, I had already tried them out in the Clubland. Clubland wasn't quite incredible because it was so much work, Alex.
Now, were they rowdy, these clubs? Because I've got a theory, and I wonder if you can tell me this is nonsense or this is true. Because your catchphrase, and there's more.
Yeah.
And you do like a little come hither beckoning with your
hands.
That's
right, yeah.
You lean in.
Yeah.
And there's more. Come here. It's kind of a bit, we're going to be intimate now. Shh.
That's right.
Quiet. Was this born from the fact that the clubs were rowdy and you speak naturally quite quietly on stage? Are you trying to draw people in and get them to shut up, basically?
Yes. But of course, like everything else, you will get a little bit better, so then someone will come in. You could play places like Wigan, where they would say, oh, we had a comedian on the Jimmy Cricket. So when you'd go back, half of them
would come back to see
so they're
you.
More come back to see and tell their friends. So you are building your name. But it was grown out of that, and then it became obviously a nice thing. People would enjoy that you did it. And it was part of your persona. We're all looking for things like that.
Yeah.
I think every comic will tell you. It's like, get back to Ken Platt. I won't take my coat off. I'm not stopping.
Yeah.
Became his. People liked it. It's his own original. And that's, to me, it's the lifeblood of any business, and show business maybe especially, is that to be different from somebody else. And so if you have those things, and then the public can latch on. You know, it's the guy that says comedian. Because they know you as Jimmy Cricket. Yeah. But in those days, they were just the next morning going to work. I saw a guy at the club last night, and he kept saying, come here, there's more. Oh, and he wore these things. So you were building your...
Yeah. Now, another thing he used to do was carry on a big suitcase, which to modern comedians, we've not seen anything like that now. That doesn't exist. One, because ventriloquism isn't a big thing.
Right.
Now, you did a slight... I've seen you do a ventriloquist act.
On my knees.
On your knees.
Yeah.
With your knees, which is just a mickey take.
Yeah.
Of like, you're not even pretending to
be... No, I know. Don't watch my lips and that. Yeah.
And that's just a great joke. Huh. Now, what's... Is there anything in that suitcase?
Well, I've got three juggling balls for a start, because...
But the suitcase is as big as a sofa.
We've scaled down now.
Right.
You're absolutely right, Alec.
It was massive.
The fun about that was to open it up and take a spoon out and then play it on your arm and then put it back in, and then that's the laugh.
Yeah.
But actually, the props then became quite an integral part, so it started to pack out with hats.
Right.
Yeah, I would do a safari routine.
Right.
Then I would do a building set routine with a hard hat. Then I would do some of the modern props. You know, I'd get a book with a hole in it, look through and say, Facebook.
Oh,
I like to keep the act fresh. So although we've scaled down a bit, there's still... And then Mrs. Cricket, you never stop putting stuff in. Only 6 months ago, she said, gosh, when you finished your act, it's full of props. And I pity the poor act coming on after the singer, you know, because they won't give us time to get them all. She said, I'm going to put a box down, fold it in. It folds into your case. She's wonderful, my wife. But it'll open. So as soon as you finish the prop, Facebook, bung it into that. So we can
just scoop it off.
Scoop it
away.
Off and get the next act on, give him a clear stage.
Yeah, because I always hate prop comedians or any kind of mess. If you're on a bill with them and you walk on and you're like, tripping over the stuff and slipping and kicking it.
The ideal thing is to have a little breaker come on. They should always put them at the end of the first half.
Yeah, of course.
Or the end.
Course
because you've got the intervention. He can collect his stuff. Because he's worried about you're going to tramp on them anyway.
Of course he is, because he's got to buy new. And it's different for you because you're doing, you know, big theatres with curtains and stuff.
Yes, and that's exactly what they do. When I went up to Berwick-on-Tweed on Sunday, and what happens is, for my last spot, I keep that as the prop thing, you know, because you get lots of families and kids and they love all the comedy magic. And so what I would do, I'll open my second spot, and the curtain will close as May, my good lady sings now. She comes on the road with me. So after she finishes her spot, the curtains close, and then I go out. And I don't wear my hat in the thing. That's the great thing. They've seen it in the first half.
Right.
I can move on now.
Right.
I can take them with me, so I don't have to actually then wear that in the second spot. So that's nice. I can come on, and then they go, if you wear... It's still a little slightly gaudy suit. It's not too conservative, but it's different than that. And so they do all that. Then I'll do a few gags and say, do a few impressions. And I'll say, now, my impression of a set of curtains opening. Now, the curtains will open, and there's the prop case.
Right, okay.
Because they used the first few minutes of my act to set the case and the table while I did my opening 5 minutes, then that was their cue for stage manager, open it. Now I have that to the end of the show, you see. It's going to be there. I can refer to it. I can do the juggling. Bang, bang, bang. I also have my saxophone, so I'm finishing that. So that's there as well.
I've never seen that bit. Do you actually play, or is it a joke?
No, I actually play, and I work hard to get it. I took it up late, and it's been so, frustrating, because with a comic you can get laughs, but when I was starting out with it, I wanted to get it so right.
Yeah,
but they were roaring when you got, but I went with the flow. But now I should have practiced.
Right. So that must be that old, because Les Dawson apparently was a brilliant pianist, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
But he was a super pianist who then...
knew where to hit that note at the wrong time, because it just wasn't a noise. That's not funny.
No,
you need to start off doing it. And then, and the audience are singing, and as they get to the, and he hits the, they laugh as they sing. It's just a beautiful routine. It's just a beautiful routine.
I saw him in Pants do that in Manchester. It was
Les was special. And you know, I spoke to his widow a few years back, Tracy Dawson, and she said, you know, Jim, Les liked nothing better than to go in to the lounge room where the piano is and just play jazz and swing. He liked playing his piano. That's so cute.
That
was his therapy to get away from that.
Because he's written a couple of autobiographies. I've read
Joker in the Pack and things.
Climb Too Many is the other one.
But he had such great rhetoric. Les took stand-up comedy onto another level. He was a poet, really, in a way.
Yeah, he's a brilliant writer. Wasn't
yes, the words flowed out of him. He's very special.
Now, when you write jokes, did you have a writing partner? Did you?
Yeah, I chased a lot of people. I that was always my thing, to try and get stuff, and I was very, very lucky. And I just, when I started to get a break on the television, I wrote off to Eddie Brabham, who'd written for Ken Dodd and Mark and Wise. It's where do you, so much was happening then.
Yeah.
Basically, I did a Des O'Connor show, chat with Mick Miller and a guy called Bobby Nutt.
Oh, yeah. Really,
yeah, from
Bobby
Sheffield. Yeah, yeah. He was a good actor as well. And out of that, I actually, would you believe, got a pilot for Thames Television.
Off just being on the Des O'Connor.
I've been on other things.
Yeah,
little and large and that. But because Thames put on the Des O'Connor, I can only think that that must have been the one that made up their mind.
Right.
I've been on other things. I mean, I always thought that was the great thing about the young comics, that they all had a moral code where they wouldn't infringe on anybody else's.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think it's a different...
Everybody did nick didn't. Things. But no, I always thought that was great. So much so now that I would, if I saw somebody do something, I would go and I say, if you refuse, I won't fall out with you. But I like that and I would love to use it. And I did it with Milton Jones, would you believe?
Oh, right, yeah.
And no, Frank Milton, said to me, you mustn't do that, Dad, because it's different these days.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They don't want you to do it. And I said, well, it'll only cost an email, Frank. And if Milton says he doesn't want it, because we'd met in Edinburgh, we'd gone up to Edinburgh with my two sons and we did a sort of an hour. And this was about, I'm trying to think when that would have been, 90s, some point, mid-90s. And Milton used to be on before me. In the Pleasance Cabaret Bar, and we used to chat like nobody's business.
Well, you're very similar. I was saying this before we got
we
the microphones
that.
On.
Yeah.
Milton Jones, Harry Hill.
Harry Hill.
You.
Tim Vine, of course.
Tim Vine, he's just a
master.
Absolutely,
yeah, and he's become a family friend as well. I said,
but Tim Vine's not... Tim Vine is silly, I suppose, but he doesn't dress silly, does he?
No, he doesn't, right.
The others all are daft. There's like this
They've got the gear. Harry's got the collar, and there's just Milton's got the hair. Yeah. And I said, do you remember, Milton, we met Edinburgh, we chatted, put the world to right. And to be honest, I didn't realise this was his gag until Frank said it. But when I did it, I'll tell you the gag.
What was the joke?
I'll tell you. I embroidered it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm walking along and all of a sudden this pizza comes out of this shop and hits me on the arm. And as it hits me on the arm, I hear... I found my thrill, bop, 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 on Blueberry. And I thought, that's a Domino's pizza. So I carried on. Actually, this wasn't Melton's original joke.
Right,
I embroidered it.
Right.
So I carried on. Past McDonald's, and a cheeseburger comes out and hits me on the leg. Now, so far... this joke's cost me an arm and a leg, right?
Yeah.
That's my next laugh. Yeah. Which wasn't in the original,
right?
That's why I wanted to hang on to this joke.
Yeah.
I built it up a bit, right? So, and then I passed this bit. There's a Chinese restaurant. Four floors up. Five. But that's another story, right? Still not Milton's embroidery. Yeah. But here's where the tag was Milton's. This Chinese takeaway came out, landed inches from my foot. Honestly, you don't know where the next meal's coming from. Right, that's the tag. But Milton's was opening the fridge door, and a pizza flew out. And I say, Milton's was quite quick.
Yeah,
virtually
a
one-liner.
Yeah.
A little bit longer in between a big bog-standard joke and a one-liner. And but Milton was, it couldn't have been nicer. He said, Jimmy, you can have it with pleasure. He wrote back an email. I mean, I wouldn't do it in comedy clubs. They probably know I do it in comedy clubs. So, but I never did any
20
comedy.
Years ago.
Exactly.
Well,
I never did comedy club to all that many. I just said, well, if I've got your gracious permission, and that illustrates the way I feel now that you've really...
So here's a question then, because this will happen with some of our new comedians. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
You write a joke, somebody writes a joke, and especially if it's a one-liner, because sometimes you might arrive at the punchline first and work your way back.
Absolutely.
So the crossover happens all the time.
All the
with
time.
All the one-liners. Now, you've got this bit here that you've said. There's four jokes. There's a pizza on the arm, Domino's, Pasta McDonald's, already this has cost me an arm and a leg.
Right.
Four-story, five-story, that's a different story.
Yeah.
So there's three jokes there that are yours, and then there's the other bit that's the same as somebody
else's.
How do you work that then? Do you keep those three jokes and try and find another tag? Do you put each one of those jokes into a different routine? Do you just kill them? How would you do? Do you recycle your stuff?
Well, that's a very, very good. You have all those wonderful permutations, actually. You're right, Alex. Maybe I should have tried to get another die. Well, I thought if I've got the blessing from Milton.
Yeah.
I thought, yes, let's go. If at the time I could have made another call, just split them up, would have been. That probably. But morally, have you? It's your own, in your own heart. To tell you the truth, whatever you feel. Right, but I definitely think if somebody's written it first, that's theirs, and you, it's so much more important to be more original. Get your own. And the other thing is, don't if somebody else does it, it's your own blood pressure. Let them get on too. You might get a bit upset at the start and things. But
now, has this happened with you? Has anybody nicked you when you were at your peak in the 80s? You were about as big as anyone, whichever 1 or 2 years it was. Yeah. That's how it worked in those days.
It did, yeah.
Millions of people
saw you.
You
had your time in the sunshine,
and you were huge. And Ken Goodwin was somebody.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe that was the beginning of the 80s, about 82.
Yeah, 83. I love
so
Ken.
So my grandparents used to make me ill laughing.
Yeah.
And what just an absolute genius. He was big for like 2 years and then not as big. No. Still famous, but not like a superstar
massive
in those days. Can't describe it now.
Oh.
It's like Kardashian big. That's how big it was in those days.
Yeah.
So when you're at your peak, there must have been Billy Cricket and Terry Cricket or coming on with, you know, left and right, well, he's wrong.
Oh, well, that's lovely. They're doing an impression, so they're actually doing a tribute to you.
No, I don't mean impressions then.
No, you mean somebody actually takes your stuff.
Somebody ripping it a
bit. Yes, they would. Yes.
Now, how was that dealt with in the old
days? I suppose being a Christian. No, it's only part at any given time, I suppose you have to, you know, to say your faith. That helps you to come to terms. You know, you're not. If it helps them in their career, and I suppose it is a bit of flattery, and it's annoying at first, but if you're able to get more stuff, and you keep, that's the whole thing. Don't dwell on that. Get on to get other stuff and things. A sort of a thing that suits my character. So they can't always take the stuff because it does sound twee when it's not coming from when they're buying into the character. Yeah. There's another, just a postscript to this, I must just say. Sometimes you can be accused of plagiarism, and this is a general thing, but you've both come up with the same.
That does definitely happen, yeah.
Yeah, because I had a guy called Mel Dover who used to write a little bit for me then, and he did a joke for me, which I do in a routine again, 3 or 4. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we don't get the service now. I rang up the railway station. And I said, railway station, come closer to the phone. What time does the next train go to London? He said, look it up online. Look it up online. I mean, how dangerous is that? You're walking up and down the line. Right. Now, did I see Tim do something similar? And right away I rang Mel, you know, I'll give you 15, not a fortune. You didn't get it from Tim because I couldn't use it. He said, no, I haven't seen his act. He said, I know he does puns like you, so thank you. And I'm nearly sure I made my peace with Tim, and so he knew. But that's how,
jokes. Know, well, the
can be without, you know,
especially gaggers,
yes, because online, look it up online, railway line. Tim's very, very brilliant.
Yeah.
Getting the
and
play
a
on
lot
words,
of, word plays is reverse engineered, isn't it? Basically, where you'll come up with a famous set, thick as 2 shot planks, and go, how can that be a punchline? Bird in the hand. How can that be your punchline? And then
and
you work
come all
way
the
back
way back.
You engineer it.
I said that to Milton once. He came for lunch at my other house. And I looked at him and said, it's cliches, isn't it? And he said, shh, we've got the copyright.
Oh, that's great. Right, I've just got a couple of final questions. Do you know what? I'll edit that so that's the end. That's such a great out.
I've got
a couple of other things because I think we've covered everything I wanted to do. Right, this is the other bit that I want to do within the podcast that I'm going to get everybody to do, and it's going to be basically, if this is a new comedians podcast, you're not a new comedian.
I love helping people on the road, and
good.
I think it's great.
It's good tough, isn't it? It's tough on the
road. Oh yeah, if I can anything, it's just lovely to help.
When you were new, we've heard how you've broken through and you've had a couple of good breaks and stuff. What were you given any good advice early on that you can remember when you were rubbish? Because everybody's rubbish at the first couple of times they do it.
Oh, they are
terrible. So, were you given advice then? Did you figure something out yourself? Could you pass? Is there anything you'd pass on to new comedians?
I would get an inspirational book. Really? Yeah, I used to read. Yes. Well, positive thinking. The power of positive thinking, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. Now, that has a religious connotation, but if you wanted, there is a book by Napoleon Hill and Clement Stone,
right.
An American book called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude.
Right, yeah, PMA, I've heard that a lot. PMA. Is that from this book?
Absolutely. That book will give you so much. Because you've got self-motivators. And when it's a hard night and you go home... And you're ready to give up the next day.
Yeah.
One of the motivators will be a winner never quits and a quitter never wins.
Right. I've heard all these things. I didn't know it was all from this book.
Yeah, a lot of them are from that book. And anything the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. So this keeps you focused.
Right, okay.
You know, and especially in those low moments, you know. And it sort of gives you peace of mind, keeps you healthy, and keeps you working towards being a better act.
So do you still die on stage ever? Because it's difficult when you're famous, I think. I don't think you...
Yeah, the only time you will, if you're in the wrong place or they're very late, you go on and... It's the terminology. You won't sort of die the way you did from inexperience. Yeah. But, all right, I'm going to own up, everybody. I drove all the way to Berwick and there was only 44 people in the audience, right?
Right, Berwick-on-Tweed, which Berwick. Is almost... Is it Scotland?
Yes, a 3.5-hour, 7-hour journey. But I loved playing because those 44 had bought a ticket. They were wanting to see you.
Right.
They were fans, and I had the time of my life. And I remember, and you know, the greatest thing afterwards, a lady came up and bought a DVD afterwards, Alex, with it may have been her son with her. It was one of those, it wasn't too young, but it was. Should have, a little bit older for her son, but maybe too young for her husband. So it's. But she said, you know, I could watch that again. And that is the great, you know, that all your work and all your practice and to hear something like that, it's so emotional, you know?
Yeah. So I'm working out now. You said earlier, 1972 Broadway, so that's 44 years ago.
Yeah.
You still clearly love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, do you ever stop?
I'm a ham. No. It's going to be a Tommy Cooper, I think. It's going to be carried off, really. You know? What way to go, though?
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. As long as I get my playoff music.
Or you can saxophone yourself.
I was going to say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, listen, we played on with the piano and the
ABBA. Let's
play with the saxophone.
Okay, so Jimmy's gone upstairs to get his saxophone and he's going to start playing it from the bedroom, and he's going to walk down the stairs. Make sure you don't fall down the stairs, Russ. Jimmy Cricket, what?
From the stairs.
That is going to be, that's the standard now. Old comedians doing new comedians to beat. Thank you so much, Jimmy. It's been
a pleasure. Pleasure, Alex. And good luck, all you young comics. And I hope to see you on the road. Like I met with Alex at the services.
McDonald's.
McDonald's. Yeah. Cheers, everybody.
Thank you, Jimmy. Well, what a day. So, serenaded from the stairs, Bring Me Sunshine on Jimmy Cricket's saxophone. That was so great. Jimmy Cricket is going to be a tough act for anyone to follow. If you enjoyed this extra content, the bonus new comedians content, please rate and review us on iTunes. And also, you can check out a new comedians show at the Manchester Comedy Store. It's only £4 to get in, £1 concessions. It's the third Sunday of every month and it starts at 7:30. Thanks. Thank you for downloading the New Comedians podcast. I've been Alex Boardman. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexBoardman. Big thanks to The Comedy Store for hosting us on the third Sunday of every month. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. The producer was Richard Massara.
Bye.
Bye.